thanks, Davey, for ruining the beginning of our Phantom episode. You know, now would have been the ideal time to use the Phantom of the Opera Overture as our opening song, but we already did in an earlier episode because Davey just had to talk about her dumb business idea. So now what are we supposed to use?
Well, you know, there's an old saying that I think fits for situations like this.
Oh yeah? What's that?
Hasa diga davaway.
Hasa diga davaway? Am I saying that right? What exactly does that phrase mean?
Well, let's see. Davaway means Davy, and hasa diga means fuck you. So I guess in English it would be fuck you, Davy.
Well, that's pretty neat. Hasa diga davaway.
Sirs, that's enough. This is libel, and I'm filing a lawsuit.
Okay, Davey. I just have one thing to say in response to that.
Hasa diga davaway.
There isn't enough food to eat. Hasa diga davaway. People are starving in the street. Hasa diga davaway. Hasa diga davaway.
Well, that's pretty neat.
Does it mean no worries for the rest of our days?
Kind of.
Hi, I'm Erica, and welcome to episode 6 of T&E Theater Factory, which is going to be way too much stuff about Andrew Lloyd Webber's The Phantom of the Opera. We'll talk about the current Broadway cast, which we saw about a month ago now, and I will also comment on the several touring productions I've seen in the past, not to mention the movie version, and the book, and so much more.
And I'm just going to sit here and be quiet, like Steve Brule, because I am the furthest you can get from a Phantom expert. Hi, this is Travis, by the way. Before Erica goes into her monologue, I just want to thank those of you who are listening and providing feedback. Again, please feel free to leave a rating and or review on whatever platform you use to listen to us, whether that's iTunes or Google Music or the WordPress blog or Player FM.
Yes, yes to all those things. So, Phantom, where to begin? This show was formative, not only to my love of musical theater, but honestly to aspects of my entire life. I guess I'll start at the beginning.
And this show had so little impact on my life that I saw the 1997 tour with my mom and grandfather when I was 15, and the only thing I could remember was a chandelier fell on the stage at some point. That's it. That's the whole memory I have of that. I couldn't even remember there was a boat ride through foggy water, which, as I have now learned, was quite the innovation, apparently. And I think you first were like, oh, do you remember the boat? And I was like,
literally.
I was like, boat? There was a boat? That's how little. I paid more attention this time around, though, so I can say something, but I won't have much in the way of comparisons, unfortunately.
Well, anyway, as I've mentioned before on this podcast, most of my performing arts experience has been with ballet. Alright, so we're going to get into a little bit of a story here. So I took ballet classes from the time I was about 4 years old, and originally I was at one of those local kind of rinky-dink schools, you know, the ones that go to, like, competitions and do lyrical and stuff like that. And that's fine if that's what you're into. But a couple of years into it, my mom took me to see The Nutcracker at the Providence Performing Arts Center for the first time. And afterwards, I said that I wanted to dance like that. So the next year, I left my old ballet school and began taking classes at the Dance Center, that's what the school was called, in North Providence. And at the time, that was the school for Festival Ballet of Rhode Island, which also at the time was one of only two professional ballet companies in the state, and it was also definitely the bigger of the two. Fast forward to sixth grade, when I auditioned for and was accepted into the junior company, which meant I'd be performing in my very first Nutcracker. Now, this was 1992, and I had never been backstage in a real theater before. You know, you kind of expect it to be, like, plush and fancy with all the mirrors surrounded by the round bulbs and all that stuff. And we had those, but the rest of the theater at that time, and this is the Providence Performing Arts Center I'm talking about, which I'm just going to abbreviate as PPAC from here on out, since that's what everyone calls it here.
No, say the entire name every time.
Ugh. Anyway, it was kind of a dump. I mean, the dressing room that all of the junior company shared was in the basement, and you had to walk on this shabby, thin, like, threadbare carpet over the hard concrete floor across the whole building, and all the pipes were visible everywhere, and there was paint peeling, and just, it was far from glamorous. I mean, don't get me wrong, I loved being there, but there was nothing fancy about this version of PPAC. Excuse me, the Providence Performing Arts Center.
Correct.
This is going to get very old.
Or we can say the Lowe's Theater, as we somehow
as we learned yesterday.
Recently learned that that's what it's actually called, despite you being performing in there and
yeah.
Both of us going there our whole lives. We learned this fact yesterday.
Never knew this. And I guess now would be a good time to note, too, that PPAC is the theater where all the touring musicals and concerts and other performers go. In Providence, there's that theater, and then there's the slightly smaller Veterans Memorial Auditorium, which tends to do, like, symphonies and smaller events. Festival of Ballet didn't use it too much at the time, although nowadays that's where they perform almost all of their shows besides the Nutcracker.
Yeah, it seems like every ballet we see them do now takes place at Vets instead. It's a pretty big theater in its own right, but PPAC is, like, twice the size of it or something.
Yeah, I looked it up. So, Vets has 1,900 seats, but PPAC has 3,100, so yeah, it's considerably larger.
Yay for tiny Rhode Island. We have two massive theaters within walking distances of each other in Providence.
And not to mention all the little theaters, as we've talked about before. You know, again, for the smallest state, it is really incredible. Anyway, at some point around maybe 1994... it was announced that PPAC was going to be completely renovated, at least the stage and the backstage areas, and they probably touched up some things in the front of the house, because they wanted to be able to bring in some of the bigger touring shows that were really popular at the time, like Phantom of the Opera and Miss Saigon, which, funnily enough, we saw last night at this very theater, and that will be one of the topics of our next podcast. But anyway, in the theater's current state before these renovations, there was literally not enough room for the sets and the props and everything else that these shows required. So after this took place and the theater was back in business, Phantom came to Providence for the very first time ever during October of 1995 and stayed for over a month during my freshman year of high school. And I'm sure this wasn't the case at your school, because your school was weird, but... but
my school was dangerous.
Seriously, though. Like, we could do a whole separate non-off-topic show on that.
One day we'll cover that.
but at my high school, even, the show was, like, a phenomenon. Like, everyone was going to see it and coming back with t-shirts and stuff. So, my parents had decided to get tickets because this was, like I said, still an extremely popular show at the time, and my parents aren't generally city people. I mean, I hadn't even gone up to Boston ever until I was in college, and it wasn't with them. It was to do research. So, anyway, we weren't going to Broadway anytime soon to see shows, so this was going to have to be good enough. Now, I'll admit that I wasn't really following it closely. My mom bought the highlight CD a few weeks before we saw the show, just to kind of, like, get an idea. And I listened to it, but I didn't really know the story or much of anything about the staging and whatnot. So, like, I listened to the highlight CD, and I pictured something totally different in my head. Well, we went to go see the show, and we had orchestra seats probably, like, halfway back. I remember I bought a t-shirt and one of the special show programs, and, I don't know. Mostly it was weird to me to be back on the audience side of the theater, because now I was so used to being backstage. I remember thinking that, you know, the show was good, and I was certainly impressed by the performances and the scenery and all that typical stuff, but I guess I kind of expected that my interest in the show would end there. Well... So here's where another aspect of my life comes in. Now, people who are here for my Twitter account, which reminder is @frontcenterecr. So people from there who know about my writing, this is where you'll want to actually start paying attention. So back in seventh grade, we're jumping time a lot today. Back in seventh grade, for reasons that were never made clear to me, I was chosen to escort the new girl around during her entire first day. We were put in all the same classes, and I was, like, supposed to introduce her to all of her teachers and make sure she had, like, a place to sit at lunch and all that stuff. And the thing was, it was clear from the beginning of this day that this girl felt like this was completely unnecessary, like, the stupidest thing that we had to do. And it was also clear, like, we were not going to go on to be friends or anything. So it was just a really awkward thing I was tasked with. And sure enough, like, we had zero to do with each other after that day, and she adjusted to school just fine, you know, but the whole day, I was thinking, like, why? Why was I chosen to do this? So I guess this weighed on me, and at some point, the thought must have popped into my head of, like, what would have happened if it had been someone else? Like, someone who was completely crazy, and the day escalated from being just kind of embarrassing to something, like, dangerous. And hence, the very beginning of my series was born, when my character Whiskey, and her name is a whole story in itself, is paired up with her future friend forever. Uh-oh.
The Phantom of the Opera.
No, not yet.
No, okay. And
the slightly insane ginger kid, Randy Hurst. No. You're jumping ahead. So anyway,
I'm just trying to loop this back to Phantom.
It does. I promise it does. In fact, it does in, like, very, very shortly. So I spent the next few years thinking up, like, different scenarios that Whiskey and Randy would get into. And I started to build, like, a world and a story for them. But by ninth grade, things were kind of stagnating. I mean, my story is very reality-based, so there's only so much drama that can happen. You know, I'm not dropping in, like, dragons or anything like that. So, like, I tried introducing other third characters, like other ninth graders and stuff, but no one ever really stuck. No one was ever really that interesting. Well, after we saw Phantom, the show did start to grow on me. So we progressed from having the highlight CD, and eventually I got the 2 cassette cast recording, and that became, like, all I listened to. And I started studying the show program, both the souvenir one, which has, like, the history of the show, but also the one for the specific cast, which I am fairly positive was the 3rd national tour. So this interest and my story, which I was thinking up in my head, but I had yet to actually start writing down, began to collide. And specifically, I started to think, what would happen if my main character, who did ballet like me, and who I always considered to have some kind of performing background, got a role in the Phantom Tour? This very same tour that was just in town. Now, for those of you that know something about my story, I didn't have Mike as a character yet. I had, like, no realistic plans for how this would ever happen. But who cared? You know, I was just thinking this stuff up for the hell of it. I wasn't ever planning to publish this, so it really didn't matter. And originally, I wasn't going to make her, like, just a ballet girl. I was going to make her freaking Christine Daae, because go big or go home, right? And what I did know I wanted to happen was that the guy playing the Phantom was not going to be happy about this turn of events. So as I started building this story, I did what any 14-year-old thinking up a story for fun would do when it came time to create all these extra characters, and I just stole everyone's names from the cast of the show I'd just seen. Not that any of my characters were, like, based off of these people exactly. You know, no one had a backstory at this point or anything, but yeah. In fact, I hesitate to say who my original Phantom was. I mean, if you want to go out and do research on the internet, I'm sure you can find it, but I hesitate to say, because people that are familiar with my series are going to be like, really? Because although I've changed my character's name, I did not want to go too far afield after having spent 20 years referring to this character by this damn name. Well, time marched on, and eventually the addition of all these new characters was actually leading to some interesting storylines. And it was pretty clear that the person who became TJ was going to stick around as a main character. So at some point in 10th grade, I actually did begin writing this stuff down. Actually, it was right after I read the book Pet Sematary, Stephen King's Pet Sematary, for the first time. Like, that book is pretty close to perfect as far as I'm concerned. And even though my story has very little in common with it, I don't know, for some reason, reading that was the push I needed to start typing up the stuff that I'd been thinking for years. Now, in 11th grade, the Phantom Tour came back around, and this time was with a completely different cast. And this one, I will say, was led by Ron Bohmer as the Phantom, and I want to say Sandra Joseph as Christine. So, fun fact, they are actually a married couple, and I think that might have happened after they started in the show together. And second fun fact, Ron Bohmer is currently playing Elder Price's dad in the first national tour of the Book of Mormon.
Bam, tied into our intro.
That's right. So, yay. Anyway, everyone else I have completely no memory of. This time, just my dad and I went. My mom was of the opinion that we saw the show once, there was no need to see it again, and that's not really how theater works, but she might have made the right choice, because my dad and I both agree that this cast was not nearly as good as the one we had seen back in 1995.
And this is the one I saw and remember absolutely nothing about. I'll use, wasn't as good as my excuse, maybe? Does that work?
There you go. Yeah, fair enough. So after the show, my dad and I, we stopped at Greg's, which is like a big restaurant in my hometown, for cheesecake. And once I was back home, I opened up the file that I was using as like a diary on my brand new computer and wrote like a 4-page single-spaced diatribe about everything I disliked about this cast. And it was just nowhere near as good. Unfortunately, I cannot access that file because it was created in, and I'll be amazed if anyone knows what I'm talking about here, Lotus Word Pro. Silence, I'm sure. And I password protected it at the time because it was like my diary. And there's literally no way to break into that file. I've looked into it excessively because I would love to see what I was writing about back then. And there's no way to do it without downloading some really sketchy programs that I have no intention of doing.
Yes, you and the five people on Earth that still remember Lotus Notes.
It was a good program. I mean, that's all there was. I don't think Word was around at the time. So that's what you had. You had Lotus Word Pro. Well, seriously, though. I do remember about this cast, though, thinking that the Phantom, Mr. Bohmer, you know, he was too over-the-top and childish, like, especially in the final layer. And in any case, he didn't come close to Phantom number one. And curious, I've found clips of both men in the show on YouTube, and I still stand by my opinion. Although, to be fair, Ron Bohmer singing is better than I remembered it, but again, I think my problem was more with his acting choices in some of the scenes. But without breaking into that Lotus Word profile, we're never getting the details. Nevertheless, Phantom was a fully entrenched part of my series by this point, and I'd gone all in. I would listen to the entire cast recording every single night, and I'm not kidding. Because that was the best way to get into the mindset of being in the show. And it's not like I had a ton of time to do this, because by this point in my life, I was still in the ballet company. So I was taking ballet classes, God, probably 4 days a week at least, probably closer to 5. And that's not including rehearsals for when we had shows. I owned a horse, which meant riding several times a week. I worked part-time at Dunkin' Donuts. And I had to stay on the honor roll, lest my life be destroyed by my parents. So, luckily, I was not a teen that needed a lot of sleep, because I did my writing and my thinking about my story late at night after everything else was done. So, by the time I was in, like, 12th grade, I knew the show inside and out. And the internet was still really new at this time, because this was still the late 90s. But there were already sites talking about, like, some of the secrets of the show, But videos were still impossible to download because, again, this was firmly in the days of dial-up, so I basically created blocking and the staging in my head from scratch until many, many years later when it was actually possible to see recordings of the show and then as much of the actual blocking as possible. So the weird side to this is that I feel like I've been part of the show. Like, I know it sounds crazy, and I know I actually haven't, so...
It's a little crazy.
See, it's not a problem, though, unless you actually, like, literally think that you've been part of the show.
Right, yeah, you haven't done that.
I know I haven't, so there, I'm not insane.
You're like, I was in the 1997 tour.
Anyway, so when we were in New York last month, and when we were seeing the show, we're standing in the lobby of the Majestic waiting to go up the stairs, and we were standing right next to the merch counter, and Travis was like, don't you want to get something? And I'm just like, nah, it's alright. Because doing so would feel weird to me. Like, sorry, I've been busy directing and acting in the show in multiple roles since the late 90s, so I don't really feel the need for a t-shirt or, like, a magnet.
See, that's crazy. That's that actually comes back around to crazy. I'm like, do you want the sweatshirt? I'm like, nah, I've been in the Phantom of the Opera for the better part of the last 25 years. Okay.
You're mean. And the bad side to this is that because of this, you know, I admit that no actual cast can possibly live up to the idealized version in my head. And that's not to say that I didn't enjoy the Broadway production, because overall I did. But there's always going to be a sheen of disappointment, and that's just how it is, I guess.
Okay, do I get to talk about something now, Miss Monologue?
No, you get to monologue during the Sound of Music episode that we're probably never doing.
Yeah,
or we're doing someday in the far future.
Right, thank you. See, you don't have to sit through. See, the thing is that I probably won't even have a monologue as long as yours, even if we do a Sound of Music episode. But in fairness, while I love the Sound of Music, it didn't alter the course of my life.
Yeah.
So I guess you get a monologue pass here, though, perhaps.
Beware if we do an Assassins episode, too. That's going to be another monologue.
I'm just going to leave.
But you're part of that monologue, though.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we wouldn't have met without Assassins.
Exactly.
But, like, the whole part before you met me will just be, like, a 30-minute monologue. I'm just going to do the intro and then go play with the cats for 30 minutes and then come back.
Okay.
Anyway, we saw The Phantom on Broadway last month, as Erica said. This time, I remember a lot more.
Yay!
Although,
good job.
I mean, I hope so. It was a month ago.
Yeah, you're not me.
No, I actually have a great memory
A terrible memory.
Let's say I have a great memory for things that happened to me or that I'm interested in. And if it's a thing that, like, didn't... I'm sorry here, but at the time, it didn't have an effect on me. If it doesn't have an effect on me, my mind's just like, wipe it out, replace it with something about ancient Rome or whatever. So that's what happens. So anyway, seeing it this time was a little bit like seeing it for the first time, because I don't remember anything from the original one I saw. My initial thoughts watching this particular production was that the Phantom was almost like a modern-day incel creep. That's how he came across, like, almost immediately. And not that he didn't have a creep factor in the past with his Christine doll and everything.
Blow-up doll.
Right. And we have seen, you know, we've watched some videos, so I've seen some since my 1997 fail one there. But but he somehow managed to have a super aggressive, ultra-creep thing going on. And while my memory is indeed hazy about the 1997 production, as noted, I said we do own the London version on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And I don't recall him being played quite like that.
Yeah, we'll get to all of that, because it's right on the money. Like, he's supposed to be creepy, but, like, in a mysterious but intriguing way, not in, like, a terrible incel way, which was kind of what was happening here. So, as far as the cast that evening, and so we're talking about the current Broadway cast, we saw Ben Crawford as the Phantom, Kaylianne Voorhees as Christine Daae, who's actually the... you know what? I'm not actually sure if she's the understudy so much as an alternate. I believe she does do certain scheduled performances. But in any case, that's who we had. and J. Armstrong Johnson as Rahl. And there were a couple of other understudies on a few of the more minor roles, but other than that, we had the entire regular cast. And I'm going to start by saying that this was the only time, probably due to what we were just talking about, but it's the only time I've seen the show where I thought that Christine makes the right choice in the end by going with Rahl. Because in my overly critical opinion, Ben Crawford was the real weak point in this cast. Right from the start, like right from his first interactions with Christine, so like in the title song when they're getting out of the boat, he was way too gruff, way too aggressive for the Phantom. I mean, he's supposed to be, like, in awe, like, oh, there's a girl here, like, in the girl that I've been, like, chasing after, like, yeah. I can't believe it.
Right.
Not, like, manhandling her and, yeah, like, yelling.
Yeah, he was super aggressive.
Yeah. So, I mean, his singing was fine, I guess. I'm still more of a fan of the tenor style Phantom, like, Phantom number one. And it seems like as the years have gone on, there's been a trend towards more of a baritone, in some cases almost like rock-style singers in the role, and that still sounds bizarre to me. But I'm sure for other people who are used to that, my preferred style would probably sound too light. So, my preference aside, Crawford's singing was mostly fine, but I felt that his portrayal of the Phantom was way off the mark.
Yep, and another thing about this production where I was like, did this happen in the original? Is that he exposes almost his entire face the first time he gets Christine into the sewers. So I immediately, while I was watching this, I was thinking of this Family Guy skit.
Surprise.
Where, and again, Family Guy, I think so, if you've seen all of Seinfeld and all of Family Guy, every single thing that has ever happened to a person has been in both of those shows. So that's why we do this a lot. Family Guy more so because they reference musical theater perpetually. Mm-hmm. I think Seinfeld referenced Les Mis once. Oh, and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
That's right.
Anyway, off that. there's this Family Guy skit where Peter went to see the Phantom of the Opera. Like, Lois, his wife, drags him. And he just starts yelling, "Come on! Take off your mask and show us the gross half of your face so we can get out of here." Which I thought meant that the scene didn't come till closer till the end of the Phantom.
Mm-hmm.
The mask was off so early here, I was thinking while watching it, did Peter get to leave 25 minutes into the production or what? Nope, upon checking with Erica afterward, I learned that was not supposed to happen.
Yeah, so what Travis is talking about is during the Stranger Than You Dreamt It scene, which, you know, it's right after Music of the Night, when Christine, like, wakes up and she sneaks up on the Phantom and takes off his mask, because she's like, oh, hey, you know, who's this dude? And I'm hoping that this was just a slip during this particular performance, but Ben literally, like, after she took the mask off, like, looked up and exposed his damn face to the audience for a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
Like, I guess that could
looked
be...
Looked right at us.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, what? Like, I guess that could be a new blocking choice. I don't know. There have certainly been some small changes made to the show throughout the years. Although, I consider that a pretty big change.
It was like a quick preview. Like,
yeah,
look.
I mean, since I've always felt like the initial exposure of his deformities is supposed to be such a shocking moment, but towards the end. So, I mean, I've watched a lot of versions of Phantom on YouTube, and I don't remember anyone else failing to cover the deformed half of their face, or at least, you know, keeping that side of their body turned away from the audience during the scene. So it was very perplexing, and again, I hope it was just a careless mistake that night. So at first when I saw the slip in our program that we had Kaylianne Voorhees as Christine Daae, I was a bit sad, because I follow Allie Ewalt, who is the usual Christine, on social media, and so I was looking forward to seeing her a little bit. But Kaylee was great, and actually, third fun fact of the day... Did you know that she was the youngest person to ever play Christine Daae?
No, how old was she?
What do you think?
I literally have no idea. I wasn't paying attention to her age at all, so you're gonna have to tell me.
Well, so at the age of 20, she was made an alternate for Christine, opposite Norm Lewis, who is a super famous Broadway actor who I think it would be incredibly intimidating to be on stage with. But obviously, she rose to the occasion. Now, this was actually back in 2014, so it's been a few years. And I'm not sure how long she stayed with the show. She's done a few other shows within the past handful of years. But, yeah. I bet you can guess where she's from, though.
I don't know. Was it Ohio?
Yes.
Because it's the only state you care about these days.
Because everything that's awesome is from Ohio.
Yes, Ohio is so beloved by the people who live there that it's the state that spawned both the Wright brothers, who built the first airplane, likely in an attempt to fly away from Ohio, and John Glenn, who was the first American to orbit the Earth. You know, see, so for John Glenn, flying away from Ohio wasn't enough. That was done. He was like, I'm going to space as far away from Ohio as I can possibly get. And I would not be surprised if the first person on Mars is from Ohio. Then they're just going to be like, this is it. I've reached peak distance from Ohio. Yep. Until we get interstellar, interspace, hyperspeed travel or whatever.
Yeah, well, no matter what, we're going on like an Ohio trip next year because my library conference is in Cleveland. And I am thoroughly looking forward to going on like a statewide tour of all my presidential libraries and museums.
Yes, every president from the late 19th century that almost... These are the presidents that no one from most Americans cannot name. James Garfield.
Like, don't get me started, because I can list them all, and they don't want to do that. So, but anyway, going back to the topic. So, as I said, everyone else in the cast, aside from the Phantom, was actually really good. And I'm just going to throw out there that I would 100% cast the actress who's currently playing Carlotta, who's Raquel Suarez Groen, in the movie version of my series, because, you know, I'm totally going to get an HBO deal.
It's coming any day now.
Any day. Yeah, but she would be perfect for the movie version of my series as my Carlotta, a.k.a. Brenda, a.k.a. TJ's baby mama, and the antagonist, who maybe kind of has a point.
And merge that with the guy you saw on the train that looks like TJ. There you go.
Yeah, short TJ.
Random person you saw on a train that looks like your character.
Yeah, it was only once, though, and I don't think he was actually from Boston, because he got on the Green Line at Copley and got off at Prudential, which is, like, one stop, and you can literally walk that in, like, 5 minutes, so... So, like, most people that are actually from Boston don't do that. So, sadly, I think short TJ was a person I'll probably never see again. But, yeah, and but other than that, I very rarely come across people in real life who look like my characters. But she's pretty spot on, and we know she can sing the role, so, yeah. Just, again, throwing that out there.
If you're listening.
That's right. I'm sure she is.
One of our 12 listeners. If 12 would be actually spectacular. I don't know right? If we have 12. Apple doesn't give us numbers, and we're not fancy with so.
We have no idea who's
We have no idea. There could be just one person.
It's...
Hi again, Ashley.
Yeah, hi. So, it's just... It was nice, though, to see the actual original style production after what Cameron McIntosh has done to the national tour of this show. So if anyone out there listening, again, Ashley, I guess.
Yep, that's it.
No, I know there's a few other people, though. So if anyone out there listening is a fan, and that is with a PH, I'm sure you're aware of this, but if you're a more casual fan of the show or you're not a fan at all, you might not know what I'm talking about. So a handful of years ago, Cameron McIntosh, who is the producer, and along with the really useful group who work with all of Andrew Lloyd Webber's stuff, well, they decided that the tour was getting stale, and so major aspects of the direction and the staging were changed. And as far as I'm concerned, and as far as a lot of people are concerned who saw and fell in love with the original, none of these changes were for the better. Like what? Well, for just a few examples, the Big Red Staircase and the awesome Red Death costume that are super iconic for the masquerade scene, gone. Now it just takes place in front of, like, a big mirror that's hanging up on the wall. It's weird. And the Phantom's costume, it's just, like, a slightly different mask and a red coat. I mean, it's super lame. The Point of No Return blocking has changed completely. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's almost hilarious. It's so bad. And now, like, they dance together, and Christine, like, gets up on the table and is, like, making tango poses. And just do not get me started on the final lair. There's a freaking bed in the Phantom's lair now. Like, most of his lair is a bed. And the blocking has been changed, so a lot of that last scene is, like, super rapey and uncomfortable. It's really weird.
Yeah, wow. Taking away the Red Death costume and that accompanying scene would sort of make it utterly forgettable. And then I was also thinking that maybe they picked up their rapey thing from the tour and transported it into the permanent show, perhaps. That's what it felt like.
Well, maybe. I mean, if you're talking about, like, his portrayal. I mean, yeah. I wasn't really getting that vibe. I mean, you haven't seen the video of the tour because you wouldn't really know the difference. Yeah. But, like, I'm not kidding. Like, okay. He's, like, on top of her on the bed.
Okay,
like,
that's even more.
It's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the consensus, based on comments on these videos and reviews of the tour since these changes were enacted, seems to be that if you've never seen Phantom before, you'll probably enjoy it. But if you are familiar with how the show used to be, you're going to be like, what the fuck? So seriously, I'm encouraging you to go look up stuff on YouTube and check out the comments, because they're hilariously snarky, and rightly so, like 100%. I mean, if I saw the current iteration of the tour when I was in ninth grade, but like now, I don't think I'd have a TJ in my story. I don't know what the hell would have happened with that. Oh yeah, and also the chandelier doesn't fall anymore. It just kind of shakes and the lights flash on and off.
What?
I'm serious.
If that was the version I saw back then, I'm not even sure I would have remembered I'd seen it at all. It would have just been like,
seriously.
Is it like, have you ever seen The Phantom? And I would have been like, nope.
No.
What's that? I remember I went to Providence for something one day, but that's where my memory cuts off.
Yeah, no, it's really sad. I mean, they've screwed with everything that makes the show cool. Like, even the beginning, I mean, the auction scene still happens, but I'm going to admit, I still love the opening where the overture starts and, you know, like, there's the flash and the chandelier does go up and, like, slowly, like, the theater does start, like, the curtains come down, the theater starts to, like, form. Like, I still think that's really cool. And I think that still looks really great. I don't think it looks dated at all. And they've taken that away. Like, the chandelier just does not move. Like, it doesn't go up. It doesn't go down. It's just there.
I think it's probably just, like, a cost-saving measure or something. Honestly.
I don't know. I really... I can't explain it.
I mean, a shaking chandelier is not interesting or scary.
No, it's stupid. It is stupid.
It's like, oh, somebody left the window open. It's just blowing around. Is it the Phantom or a breeze?
Yeah. No, it seems like a lot of the changes that they made were trying to make it closer to the 2004 movie, the one with Gerard Butler and Emmy Rossum and Patrick Wilson as Raul. And yeah, I did actually see that in the theater when it first came out, and it was okay. Like, it wasn't a total train wreck, even though Gerard Butler was not the right casting choice. And it's such a shame, because there are obviously so many Broadway caliber singing actors out there who could have done the role. I mean, I remember, again, you know, big on message boards at that time, and people were like, you know, who do you think they're going to, like, grab to play the Phantom, like, when it was announced that this movie was going to happen? Because people were totally expecting that they were going to try to get, like, Michael Crawford, you know, the original Phantom, or, like, someone like that. But no, they're always so hell-bent on casting these movie versions and musicals with Hollywood stars.
Yep.
And sometimes it works. I do love the Chicago movie. I think that worked very well. And Into the Woods from a few years back was also pretty good. But for some unknown reason, they're attempting to make a movie version of Cats.
Wow.
Yeah, and so far, casting consists of, and I'm not kidding, Taylor Swift, James Corden, Ian McKellen, Jennifer Hudson. I mean, they're people that I get, well, maybe with the exception of Taylor Swift. they're people that are good at what they do, but it just sounds really weird. And we all know I like Cats, but this is another thing that seems completely unnecessary. There's already a film version of it from the late 90s. Like, I used to own it on VHS, and I really don't see how that show is going to translate to a movie. But I guess we'll see, because it's happening.
It feels like it's going to be a train wreck with that cast, and also it being Cats. I mean, I have no idea how they're going to pull this off in a way that's just not like a joke or something.
I don't know.
So, at this point, you had wanted me to ask about the original Phantom of the Opera film. And let me check notes here. The starring Lon Chaney.
Well, like, everyone knows that.
But once again, I have no recollection.
It's right on the poster. It's next to me on the wall.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yes, this is the Red Death costume from the actual movie.
I don't know. I thought that was like a shot from a stage production or something.
No, see why the Red Death makes sense?
I guess it does.
Because
it's part of the movie.
It looks almost exactly like the original costume from the 1925 Phantom of the Opera silent film.
T.I.L. there. In any event, I have no recollection of watching this.
I
said earlier, I don't know. I don't remember. I don't know.
That long ago.
You just asked me, and I was like, oh, yeah, he looked like a vampire. And then you were like, he doesn't really look like a vampire. And then I was like, I think I'm thinking of Nosferatu.
Yeah, and I can see that, though.
Like, that I remember. I remember watching Nosferatu. As I said earlier, my memory is really stellar for some things. Like, ridiculous. Like I remembered the exact month and year our cat was at the animal hospital, which was, like, over 3 years ago when I was at the vet the other day. So much so that the vet was like, did it snow that day? Like, they checked the notes, and they were like, yeah, that's when she was there. Did it snow that day? And I went, nah, I just remember it. And they looked at me like, what? Like, am I Rain Man or something?
Yes.
I might be for some things, but apparently, like I said, there are things that, like, do not register as like critically important to me, and my brain just like get rid of it, goes in the dumpster, and it's replaced by something else. And I'm gonna say that Phantom of the Opera is a memory black hole for me, or better yet, it's like your recollection of The Empire Strikes Back,
that's true, though.
Which you watched once and barely remember. Mm-hmm. I think you remember Lando Calrissian,
of course, because like, he's the best.
Yep, and we met Billy Dee Williams in real life at a Comic Con. But your recounting of it ended with, this was it. I had to, like, lead you there a little bit. And, like, you knew Luke was underground. That was your...
Yeah, somewhere.
And then you said, I don't know how he got down there or how he's getting out.
It's true.
Like that.
It's exactly what I said.
Yep, so... that was / is me with Phantom, I think, before I met you and we started watching some of these. Like I said at the beginning, I would have remembered a chandelier and a guy with a mask in a basement.
In the basement.
Yep, the guy in the basement.
Of the opera house.
It's a basement. He lives in the basement of the opera house. If we stick with our incel theme, he probably does live in the basement of the opera house and his mom owns it. And then I would have said, I don't know how he got down there or how he's getting out.
See, I have an excuse, though. I've had concussions, so I don't remember things. So don't shame me.
And I have apparently, like, stellar but still selective memory.
All right, well, we did watch the silent movie version, like, less than a year ago. It had to have been.
Wow.
I'm serious. We did. And I'd seen it before, but it had been a really long time since then. And, again, it's totally worth seeing. It's... actually really short and really kind of tragic. Like, I didn't remember that it ended with a torch-bearing mob that ends up throwing him into the river and drowning him. Like, that's how it ends. It just ends really suddenly, like, boom, he's dead. So it's kind of sad. But the last thing that I wanted to talk about too is the book by Gaston Leroux, and it's definitely worth reading. It's not a long novel. So if you're one of those people who's like, I don't read anything that's over 300 pages, first of all, I don't understand you. Secondly, it's only 264 pages in the version that I have. So it's short. The general story is the same as the musical, although in the book, obviously, there's more details given about some things like Christine's father and Raul and his brother and some other stuff. My fourth fun fact of the episode is that they still do take a boat to get down to where the Phantom lives, but to get down to where the boat is, originally the Phantom takes Christine down on a horse named Cesar. because, you know, back then the opera was using, like, actual animals. Like, that was still a thing. And, fifth fun fact, I'm never doing this again, but no, it's getting all, really annoying.
It's all fun facts. I don't know how they got a horse into the sewer. That's...
I know. But, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, so when Andrew Lloyd Webber and everyone else was, like, thinking up the musical, they did actually want to do that scene with a horse. Like, wow. Not a real horse. They obviously wanted to, like, do some kind of robotic horse or something.
It would have been a really bad... This is before War Horse.
Yeah, right. So if they could do it with, like, the War Horse...
It would have been some really bad, like, Monty Python, like... walking around.
No, it would have been like Milky White. You know how they in the woods, just like probably would have been like a stationary horse.
It would have just been a stagehand
being rolled down,
dragging a wheeled horse with a rope, and it would have looked really cheesy.
Yeah, so I don't know if they ever got to the stage of actually like physically creating this and doing it, but I do know from all the stuff that I've read and watched over the years that that was something that they had talked about putting in the musical. So. You know, it's like, if you're going to change it, at least try to do some fun changes like that. But, the book. So, some other details have changed, too. So, like, some of the names are a little bit different. Like, the opera managers are Monsieur Moncharmin and Richard instead of André and Fairman. I don't know why they made those changes, but they did. But you still get, like, the chandelier falling, except in the book it actually kills an audience member. You know, it doesn't swing at the stage. You've got the masquerade with the Red Death, more reasons why these things should remain in all versions of the musical.
They should drop the chandelier in the audience. That would wake people
that
up.
That would be a change.
Just stops right over someone's head. Wake up.
that would be kind of fun. But probably the biggest differences between the book and the musical are, first of all, the introduction of the Persian, who's really a main character in the novel, and he's this kind of mysterious patron who's always around, and, like, all the ballet girls, who, by the way, are supposed to be, like, young teens, this includes Christine, you know, they're, like, scared of him because they think he's kind of creepy, and you find out later on in the novel that he was around when Eric, because, again, the Phantom has a name in the book that is never referred to in the musical. But you find out that he worked for the Shah of Persia, and he was creating, like, these elaborate torture devices, but something went wrong, and Eric was supposed to be executed, and somehow the Persian, who I believe was, like, the head of the police force or something to that effect, helped him escape. So anyway, in the novel, after Eric abducts Christine, the Persian is the guy who helps Raoul get down to the lair because he knows all of Eric's tricks. But instead of it being all straightforward, like in the stage show, and I'm talking about like the final scene now, instead, somehow the Persian and Raoul get thrown into this torture room that the Phantom, you know, just kind of has hanging around near his apartment. Who doesn't? And there's, like, a viewing window that he makes Christine look through and whatnot. And, it's actually some pretty interesting scenes and, like, some of the optical tricks that he's able to do, like, trying to make them go insane and actually try to kill themselves. And also, instead of the Phantom just asking Christine to choose between staying with him or going with Raoul, he offers her instead the grasshopper or the scorpion.
See, that sounds like, I you know, to me, I hear that and I'm thinking, like, is this like the brass bull torture or something? That's what the first thing that pops into my head. It's like,
right.
Select your brass statue that I will boil you alive in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is supposed to be, like, kind of mysterious. Because at first, I think when they're mentioned, like, you don't know, like, what either of them mean. All you know is that Christine's been told to, like, turn one of these things around. So, they're actually these two little bronze figurines that he keeps in a couple of locked ebony coffins somewhere in his apartment. Because it really is an apartment that he has, like, this really fancy apartment.
Wow.
Underneath the opera house and not just, like, this creepy lair. So, who knows, maybe the change version of the musical on tour is right in that there is a bed.
Yeah, there you go. It's an actual apartment. Just didn't want to pay rent in Paris, so.
Exactly. But no, so the Phantom, he gives Christine the choice of either turning around the scorpion, which would indicate that she'll marry him, but if she turns around the grasshopper, apparently he's also been storing gunpowder in giant barrels underneath the entire opera house, and everything will explode. So, yeah, the stakes are just a little bit different here.
Does the theater blow up in the book? I'm sort of imagining, you know, gunpowder stored under the theater. It's giving me some V for Vendetta ending vibes here.
1812 Overture.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, so, spoiler alert, I guess. No, it doesn't actually blow up. although, like, see, I don't want to just, like, tell the entire story, but no, we'll leave it at that.
Just
no,
read the theater, this podcast is just reading the book now. No, don't read the book.
Yeah, no, but the simple answer is no, the theater does not blow up, something else happens. So anyway, I really liked this grasshopper and the scorpion thing. In fact, I allude to it blatantly in my story. You probably don't even remember that, because it's, like, in later books.
No, I don't think
but
I do.
It shows up, trust me. And there's a quote from the book about the grasshopper that I was, like, obsessed with. So, this I am actually going to read from the book now. But, so, you know, Eric tells Christine about the choice, and he's actually, like, leaving her. Like, he goes and, like, walks around and does stuff. I mean, he doesn't, like, just stay in the opera house, too, like, all the time. Like, he actually, like, goes out in public. And so he's actually getting ready to, like, leave Christine alone in the apartment to, like, think about her choice. And he tells her, "The grasshopper, be careful of the grasshopper. A grasshopper does not only turn, it hops. It hops, and it hops jolly high." So... I was obsessed with this particular quote. I had it printed across the outside of my art class folder in high school, and it's also part of the blurb in my senior yearbook entry.
Sounds like a very 19th century threat. It really does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the book is from, like...
Well, watch out, you devils! That grasshopper hops jolly high!
Oh, this is actually from 1911.
Okay.
It's a little later.
Well, still, it feels like that.
Yeah.
Era threat.
Yeah.
"The grasshopper hops jolly high. Watch out, young lady." Yeah. Like, that's what it... And you're like, is that so... I mean, I was scary to someone from then.
Yeah, I bet. Well, anyway, yeah, so my senior yearbook, though, I had that, and I had something from Marilyn Manson, and then my quote was from a Bare Naked Ladies song, so those things pretty well sum up my high school years.
Yeah, that does sound about right for you. Bare Naked Ladies, a band that no one in my high school listened to, and I thought was famous only from a car commercial in the 2000s. I think it was the 2000s. I don't know. No one listened to them.
Yeah,
I mean, there's probably someone who listened to them, but I didn't know them.
Yeah, meanwhile, they were like one of the top groups that my group of friends listened to, and we went to go see their concerts and stuff. So, again, I was living the Canadian lifestyle.
I was listening to Wu-Tang Clan.
In any case, if you like the musical at all, definitely check out the novel. I'm not going to tell you any more about it, because I've already gone on for too long, but it is worth the read. So, I think that just about covers it. I'm sure I could keep going, but we're, again, trying not to make this a two-hour show. So, if I think of something else that I absolutely meant to say about some aspect of Phantom, we'll just add it into our next episode, which I think is going to be a fun episode. So, we'll talk about Miss Saigon, which, again, we just saw a few nights ago. That's not really going to be the fun part. But
Yeah, whoa, that's spoiler. Miss Saigon was okay.
Tons of fun!
Miss Saigon was okay. That's the short of the next episode. But we'll
talk. Yeah, we have a lot to talk about, about that show, for sure. But, no, the fun part is going to be what we'll probably start with, and that's because... we saw a version of Dear Evan Hansen. I can't really go into too much detail about that.
A version.
It probably doesn't even exist anymore. But we saw a version of Dear Evan Hansen recently. And we both have some major thoughts about how that show should have gone.
Yeah, I think we really improved on it.
I think we got
some more fun endings and moments. So we'll get to that. But my last thoughts about the version of Phantom we actually saw, because you went off on
every tangent.
The history of the Phantom and the book, the Phantom of the, we've got the whole, the 1925 movie, so the one we actually saw.
The Broadway version.
The Broadway one, that, yeah. My thoughts on it were best summed up by a comment I made during intermission. I was already so creeped out by his behavior that I just said, thanks, I hate him, which is one of my favorite memes of all time and really suits this particular Phantom's behavior.
Yeah, it really did. It was very, very apt.
Yep.
So I guess that about covers it. Again, thank you for listening, and we'll be back in about 2 more weeks.
Yep, thanks everyone.
That voice which calls to me.